It's never been easier to make $100,000 a year as a creator, but it's never been harder to make $1 million a year as a creator.
Interesting.
I think that's probably true.
Hey, Matt, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. First of all, who is Matt? Tell us a bit more about yourself and the company.
Sure. I've been with a company called Uscreen for coming on 3 years now. And I'm the chief operating officer. My background is kind of unique in that I think about the first half of my career as more finance and investing oriented, and the second half is more operating oriented. The finance portion, I started as a lot of as a lot of folks do in early in their finance career in the investment making world, and then transitioned on to M&A, corporate development, and later investing at a growth equity firm called TCV. When I was at TCV, I was talking to dozens of really smart operators every week, and I kind of caught the operating bug, which is what slingshotted me over to the SaaS, sort of SaaS revenue generation operations world.
Tell us a bit more also about the business. So Uscreen, like in a few words, how would you describe it?
Uscreen is a bootstrapped SaaS business that serves primarily video creators and YouTubers. And we like to say that we are memberships for video creators. And so we can unpack the memberships piece a bit. We've said publicly that, some public numbers, we've said that we're, greater than 20 million of ARR. Business is growing quite nicely and very profitable, which is fairly unique in the creator economy SaaS world. So when we say that we're memberships for video creators, what we mean by that is we help creators build 7- and 8-figure annual revenue businesses that are centered around predictable subscription recurring revenue.
Said, I mean, not a couple of hours. You said a number, the 20 million ARR, and you said bootstrap, right? So not that many companies, as you correctly said, in the creator economy are bootstrapped. Not that many that get into the 8 digits in terms of revenue. So are there any key lessons there, along the way of this journey?
When I think about the management team here at Uscreen, we think about equity value creation as something that we want to build equity value in a thoughtful, sustained way over time. And we felt like, we felt like raising VC for us just wasn't the answer to do that. We didn't want to give up decision-making control. And, we felt like we have the right voices in the room to continue to grow this business. Mm-hmm. I think back in 2019, 2020, maybe early 2021, that was a pretty controversial opinion to hold in the, zero interest rate environment. And I think a lot of people criticized us for that decision at that point. In hindsight, I think it was a really good decision to stay bootstrapped. And I think it's become more fashionable in the last, 12 to 18 months, I think, to lean into that from a lot of companies, especially the profitable growth side of the equation.
Wasn't it about these are the pro, right? So you own it, you can make your own decisions. Any challenges? So what is the other side of them?
Before I joined Uscreen, I came from a background that was very much VC-centric. And I think that, I certainly had some concerns coming into a place like Uscreen. I was, for example, being able to hire great talent is the lifeblood for any growing SaaS business. I think, back 2019, 2020, so much of marketing around SaaS businesses was tied to how much money did you raise, right? You could raise a big Series A or Series B. It was a stamp of approval for your brand and your organization. And so I think it was easy to be concerned about some of that stuff early on. What I've learned over time is that A, those things don't matter nearly as much as a lot of folks thought. And B, if you're looking to hire great talent or you're looking to take your product to market, you don't necessarily want the employees or the customers that value those things in the first place. So in some ways, being a bootstrap business, it's a good thing to lean into because it helps you to self-select to get the people on board that you want to get on board. But back to your question about challenges, I think that because we are bootstrapped and don't have as big of a balance sheet maybe as some other venture-backed businesses, we have to be more thoughtful about where we focus our sales, marketing, and product roadmap energy. We can't be all things to all people.
Of course. But maybe instead of a challenge, it actually could be something good, right? Instead of burning money, you wisely select what to do. Maybe I'm looking at that in a positive way, right? More than a challenge, I would say.
Yeah, I certainly believe that to be true. I know a lot of execs at various businesses in Silicon Valley, and I think that a lot of folks have struggled coming out of the 2019 to 2021 period around how to focus the organization down. And I think one of the we largely, I think, avoided that because we had the discipline of being bootstrapped in the first place. So I think you're right. I think there's benefit to voluntarily taking on those types of constraints in the discipline it imparts.
You screen, right? You said before a bit, you know what it is. We're going to go more into that. But on the website, or I think on LinkedIn, I saw that it said like the mission of YouScreen is to generate $1 billion in earnings for creators by 2025. How?
Mm. Well, I think there's lots of ways for creators to make money.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of different revenue streams. You know, you've got your advertising revenue streams, like your programmatic ads and your brand sponsorships. You can sell transactional goods like courses and merchandise, or you can build and market and scale recurring revenue streams like memberships or paid communities. They're all important. I think creators need to have their hand in a lot of pots, you know, be multi-SKU as it were. I mean, you see that with the most successful creators. But my point of view at YouScreen is that the recurring revenue stream really should be the foundation that everything else is built on top of. And so when we talk about helping creators generate $1 billion of earnings by 2025, we're talking about recurring revenue stream.
Is it like a membership for everyone out there? Do you think that you need to have a really strong community first? And what are some of the steps for, you know, potentially like, you know, aspiring creators or creators that are growing, that are listening today? What are some of the advice for you when it comes to like, hey, I want to get started a membership?
I think a lot of creators understand advertising revenue streams and more transactional mm-hmm. revenue streams, like selling merch or selling courses, better than they understand the membership side. There's a lot of heuristics you can apply to creators, but one of my favorite is to think about creators across an education to entertainment spectrum. And no matter where you fall on that spectrum, you can create a big membership business. The further you are towards the education side, generally speaking, the more true fans you're going to have as a percentage of your total social audience, the higher conversion rate you're probably going to see to paid, and the higher sort of ARPU and customer lifetime value you'll see. You'll have better retention, you can charge more for your product, et cetera. As you sort of skew towards the entertainment side of the spectrum and more entertainment value prop related memberships, you see the inverse. Lower true fan rate, lower propensity to purchase, lower price points. Now, both of those can be successful. I think creators of all types can be successful, but all things being equal, entertainment creators generally have to have larger audiences to make the numbers really make sense. I'll give you a couple of examples, though, that are kind of interesting. We have a customer, Adrienne Mishler, and her COO, Chris Sharp.
Mm-hmm.
They built this brand called Find What Feels Good. They've got, I think, something like 16 million subs on YouTube. And they've got a very profitable 8-figure membership business that they built through YouScreen. They lean very hard into the video on demand content, the live streaming video, and then also the community side of the house. Definitely more of a, you know, it's a fitness membership, definitely more on the education side, but a slightly lower price point given the, you know, the fitness angle and the demographic. Another kind of a cool example I could point you to is a customer of ours, a creator named Justin Rhodes, has built a brand called Abundance Plus. He's a homesteader based out of Asheville, North Carolina. Again, 8-figure membership business, very education oriented. He's teaching people how to build chicken coops and slaughter pigs. So there's more topics than you might think that you can craft very compelling profitable membership businesses around.
And what do you think are the reasons why, you know, a community is engaging, but like, at least like they're paying for a membership? Is it like primarily for exclusive content? Is it because you can get much more, for instance, you know, the, you know, people that are paying every month for, let's say, you know, a year, whatever, they get something exclusive at their door. There's maybe, you know, a gift. Like, are there something specific that you notice in these years, or it is primarily just to like support your favorite creator?
It's saying like support your favorite creator. This is more the Patreon patron model. Is generally not a value prop that is compelling enough to drive big businesses with strong retention. Again, there's a number of frameworks you can bring to this, but one of my favorite is to think about in terms of a combination of transformation and belonging. So what I mean by transformation, this hits on the education piece a little bit, but you know, human beings are aiming, imitating, and individuating creatures. We want to learn, we want to grow, we want to transform.
Okay.
And then on the belonging side, that one can be harder to unpack in a tangible way sometimes, but generally there's there's some combination of like member to creator interaction. There's member to member, or you know, community member to community member interaction, peer to peer. And then I think there's, I think the best communities, frankly, have two more things. One is they have some feeling of like exclusivity. Like, I'm part of a small group. Not everybody can be part of this group. It's special. And then the second piece is they have some really compelling purpose or meaning. You know, I like to jokingly say like the best communities have some kind of like a holy war, like some kind of mission that they're on.
Is your brand ready to amplify its reach? Well, the Influencer Marketing Factory is here for you. We are a global influencer marketing agency helping brands ignite their growth. From influencer identification to campaign strategy, handling legalities and agreements, to managing shipping and logistics, we got you all covered. We work with hundreds of brands across different verticals, from Fortune 500 companies to direct-to-consumer brands. And we don't just stop there. With detailed ROI analysis, we help brands like yours measure success, transforming impressions into conversions. You can find us at theinfluencermarketingfactory.com or just searching the Influencer Marketing Factory on Google.
Let's go into a bit more about that. Like, you know, how can you strategize these on different tactics?
Think about Abundance Plus for a second, right? I think Justin Rhodes and Abundance Plus. Justin Rhodes is, his content, you know, I wouldn't call his content truly faith-based, but there's sort of a faith-based undercurrent. And he also, he's got a very spiky point of view around things like regenerative farming, why that, he has these points of view that I think people in his audience really strongly resonate with. And that's a lot of what drives, you know, leaning into that is a lot of what drives the sense of belonging and exclusivity. Another really interesting thing that Justin does is, and this gets to some of the peer-to-peer interaction in the community, but he's set up specific channels within our community experience that enable his community members to transact together, like sell each other chickens or sell seeds from their latest harvest. And so there's stuff that Justin does to kind of get that flywheel spinning. But once that flywheel starts spinning, it's also kind of self-perpetuating, which is pretty cool.
And that happens like inside the platform, like, you know, so you said that you become a member of someone that you follow, and then you can see other people that have your same values, your same interests, hobbies, and so on. And then you can select, well, like, you know, adding them in the platform and start chatting with them. Or is it like more of a public feed where everyone can kind of post it in the membership under a specific creator?
Yeah. And when you're asking that question, are you talking about the Uscreen product specifically?
Yes.
Yeah. So there's a video catalog portion, which is in some ways a lot like building your own Netflix.
Okay.
So you've got video on demand. You can arrange it in categories, organize it various ways that are appealing to your audience. And then we also have an inbuilt live streaming functionality, which allows you to communicate with your audience in real time, either one-to-one or one-to-many, depending on what you want. And then the community piece, if you're familiar with Discord, then, you know, Discord or Slack, then you'd be fairly familiar with what we offer. 85% of our customers have a mobile app that kind of ties it all together, their own branded mobile app on either Android or iPhone. We see that being truly transformative for memberships. I mean, we see 5x higher customer retention for those that are active on mobile. We see, you know, 10x plus higher engagement for videos, video engagement and community engagement.
Have you used a specific strategy there? Did you use the help of the creator themselves to push it to download it? Was there something there?
If you compare the mobile phone experience to just, let's say, like a web or a browser experience, I mean, it's an obvious no-brainer, right? Like, you carry your phone with you everywhere you go. And so you're a lot more likely to get somebody's attention than if you have a browser-only experience. You know, I think when you're competing against other apps and other attention grabbers, I don't think that tips or tricks are like fundamentally what's going to lead to a compelling user experience and then ultimately results in sort of financial benefit and customer lifetime value. The thing that really matters is it's the content that you put in. It's the community interaction. Ultimately, that's what's going to bring people coming back. So, you know, are you competing against other apps like maybe Netflix on somebody's phone or Spotify or YouTube? Yeah, but it's the transformation of belonging that's going to capture attention and help you beat out, you know, some of those other potential media experiences.
And Of course, you know. And so, in addition to that, so like, you know, we touch base on the app, push notification, community, membership. Something that's also that I wanted to, you know your take on is something very important, right? So in the past years, social media gave the opportunity to everyone to become famous, to start their own courses, to sell their own products, to get in front of people, right? That before it costed like a lot, right? You have to be on TV, on billboards, whatever. Nowadays, everyone can be potentially be, you know, scouted by an agency. They can be seen by a brand and so on in a very easy way.
Sure.
And it doesn't cost basically anything. But you don't own that, right? You don't own your audience, right? You basically are renting a place, right? So tell me a bit more about the importance nowadays and how the creative economy is shifting from a renting to an owning space.
You know, the last 5 years, there was this like pre-Cambrian explosion in tech innovation. And so you saw this rise of the YouTube creator and maybe more markedly, the TikTok creator more recently, probably stands out in people's minds. And as you pointed out, those are rented platforms. You don't own the customer data. You don't own the branding as the creator. You have very little control over the decisions that they make. And oh, by the way, you know, in YouTube, for example, they take, you know, 30% plus of the revenue that you generate on the platform. If you're a creator, you want to own your audience. You want the email address. You want to know who the customer is. You want to have a direct relationship. You can control the brand. You can control the experience. You can cross-sell products. And you can do it in a way that somebody can't take it away from you, right? YouTube can go to a creator, and if you're YouTube centric and only on YouTube, YouTube can take your business away from you overnight. So a lot of reasons why why you want to push your true fans at least towards an own media experience.
Mm-hmm.
On the rebundling side, I think what we'll see over the next probably 3 to 5 years is, I predict that in every niche, there's going to be 3 to 4 creators who own 90% of the eyeballs and 90% of the revenue, which isn't true today, although it's that Pareto curve is steepening pretty rapidly right now. Some people might interpret that as being kind of a negative thing. I see it more as A, it's inevitable, but B, on the positive side, there's many thousands of niches. So if you're a creator who has big dreams, you'll have the opportunity to fight to be one of the 3 to 4 people that owns 90% of the attention in the niche. The owned media and the rebundling thing is happening simultaneously. And I think largely the creators who invest in owned media sooner are the ones who are more likely to come out on top when it comes to the rebundling and the steepening of the Pareto distribution.
I can see that. Wow. I was not expecting that. Was absolutely interesting. Is there a last thing that you want to add on the future of the creative economy? You already touched base on a couple of things, but last remarks on that.
Look, I think there's been, depending on what week it is, you'll hear positive things about the creator economy in the news or negative.
Totally.
I mean, I'm sure you've experienced fluctuation in news
all the time.
Well, I certainly think that there are some news stories out there that are less than positive. I think a lot of it centers around maybe VC involvement in the space, particularly through COVID, and some of the shakeout from that. And I think that stuff is warranted. On the flip side, it's really never been a better time to be a creator. So, you know, I think for people maybe who aren't creators yet, but dream about being a part-time or full-time creator, or those creators who are part-time who want to go full-time, or those creators who are full-time who want to build we've got big dreams and want to build a $10 million plus annual revenue business. If you do have big dreams, I think you should go into it eyes wide open that there is going to be a rebundling and a consolidation. But that rebundling itself, I think, opens up a lot of opportunity for partners to, for creators to partner together and build bigger media brands outside of that span this, that are bigger than scope than just an individual creator themselves.
I agree. 100% with you. Been ups and down. Media saying like, you know, it's going down. Sometimes it's going up. But I do agree that it's everyone has a lot of opportunities. It's easy. It's never been that easy to create something online. Prices are going down in terms of like, you know, cameras to buy and memberships online and courses and anything like that. So yeah, absolutely. I think it's the right time to start.
You know, Hunter Walk wrote an article recently where he said it's never been easier to make $100,000 a year as a creator, but it's never been harder to make $1 million a year as a creator.
Interesting.
I think that's probably true. But again, I think if you're an ambitious creator and you want to do, you know, you want to build what you're doing beyond a lifestyle business, there are ways that you can go into that journey eyes wide open. You can think about hiring a creator COO. You can think about, you know, financing your business in appropriate ways.
Love it. Matt, thank you so much for joining me today and sharing all your knowledge with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Alessandro.
Thank you. This is The Influence Factor by The Influencer Marketing Factor, and I'll see you next week.